the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
So, Michelle, tell me, what has this coronavirus done to you, for you, and with you? Tell me a little bit.
Well, this coronavirus has been actually a very challenging time for me. The relationship with my son's father is not positive. And unfortunately, he's used this time as a way to keep my son and I apart. So it has been a time where I have had to really pull out all of my strengths and all of my resources that I've learned over the years in maintaining my resiliency. Part of the work that I do, I'm calling it radically reframing. And so taking what is and reframing it in a way that is useful. And I've had to do a lot of reframing over these past 5 weeks, and it has helped reinforce for me the distance that I've come over the years and how important doing that inner work is to maintain our sanity. And
absolutely, because it is an insane time. So yeah. Brains, hello, welcome home to On the Edge with April Mahoney, here, right here. This is the place where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never done. Okay, we have an amazing guest from Oshawa, Ontario, Canada today. It is Michelle Winterburn. And we're going to be talking about, you know, some life transitions, finding your identity, accepting who you are, adjusting to that, being a parent, counseling, and a whole lot more. Brains, please help me welcome our guest today, Michelle Winterburn. How are you, baby?
I am doing very well. Thank you so much for having me, April.
Absolutely. Me and the Brains are looking forward to this. So, Brains, this is going to be a very stimulating conversation because Michelle has had to make some adjustments in her life. Firstly, finding her own truth and finding her identity, working through finding who she was as far as her sexuality, then becoming a parent, and that came with its own blessings and challenges, and now being married to a woman and being a social worker there. So there's been a lot of ins and outs, ebbs and flows. We want to ask her what that feels like because there's other people out there that are struggling with that, trying to find out who they are, why they are what they are, and what that means to them, and how important it is to stay true to your values and to your core. So, Michelle, tell us a little bit about your story and your journey.
Well, let's see. So, in the very beginning, when I was a little girl, and, you know, when we're children, sometimes we're kissing the boys, kissing the girls. I was kissing the boys and the girls. But I grew up in a small town in Ontario, and I didn't really have an understanding of same-sex relationships, and I certainly didn't come from a family that was open or welcoming of that type of information. And I had a challenging upbringing, and I was asked to leave home, not in a kind way, at 15. And I had a few really negative experiences. I had a couple of my own Me Too experiences. And then I met a boy at that time. I was 17, he was 18. And we hit it off. And I definitely felt safe and loved in that relationship. But as I was going through my 20s, he received a job offer in the United States. We lived in Minnesota for less than a year, and we decided to move back to Canada. And when we moved back, I decided I was going to go to university. And when I was looking through the course catalog, I discovered this program called Women's Studies. I had never heard of Women's Studies before. I decided to apply. When I read it, it sounded so intriguing. And it was through that educational process, that experience at university, that I started to meet real life lesbians. And I started to see that there were other ways of being in the world. And that opened up my eyes and sort of what was inside of me to recognize that that maybe this relationship that I was in wasn't where I was meant to be. And so it wasn't an easy process to leave a loving, kind person, a good relationship to set out on my own. I was shocked. I remember when I told him what had happened for me, and what happens has happened for me at several points throughout my life, is I literally get these light bulb moments. And so I was at a pride parade in Toronto with a friend, and I saw another girl that I had gone to college with many years ago there holding hands with another woman. And at that point, I had this, oh my God, I'm gay. And then I was like, no, that can't be. I love him. I'm married. And I tried to put it out of my head. But once that realization hit, there was no pushing it back down. And so after about a month, I asked him to go to dinner. I was all nervous. And he's like, what is going on? And I said to him, I think that I might be gay. Wow. And he said, well, I kind of knew that, but that's all right. And I said, okay. And so we went on as we did, or tried to, for about a year. And then finally I said, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I feel like I need to be more than what this is.
Let me interject here. I'm going to ask some real intense questions.
Yes, please.
What is that feeling like? I mean, you know, was there no more sexual desire? Was there no more attraction? Was the conversation different? Were you drawn to, you know, feeling? Because this is what I don't understand. And I ask gay people, what is gay? Okay, because there's two species. There's male and there's female. Is gay a lifestyle? Is gay an emotion? Is gay a biological makeup? Is it in your DNA? What is gay?
Well, I guess that really depends on who you're asking, right? And as anything in the world, there are many different interpretations. For me, I guess, and I struggle on some level with labels and definitions, because I've never been one of those people who's ever really fallen clearly into any label or definition.
Right.
And so I guess for some people, I might fall more on the bisexual spectrum, because for me, my attraction to people has always been to the individual. However, I do know that particularly during that time, I was much more attracted to women. And we had had some shifts and challenges in our relationship that were happening as an aside. And so intimacy had been waning. We were together for 13 years. As with any relationship of length, right, things start to change.
Right.
But I was definitely finding myself much more attracted to women, and a few different women in particular. So for me, I have always found myself attracted to people and individuals, and they've been both men and women.
Okay.
I don't know
So, you know, and again, I'm really not into labels either, but, you know, people will say, well, you can't help but know that I'm a black female, you know, but if I saw you, I would see a white female. I would not know the intimacy and the totality of who you are unless you actually displayed it to me. So I like to ask that question because so many people don't understand if it's a feeling, if it's an emotion. You know, there's parents out there that are struggling with their children's identity. They think that it is sinful. There's others that say that they knew from the time that they were born. They don't understand. And someone gave me a very clear definition one time, that your sexuality is between your legs, but your gender is between your ears. And so again, you went from a heterosexual relationship to a homosexual relationship, and then you catapult back into a heterosexual relationship and became a parent. What made you flip the switch?
So, well, again, as with most of the experiences I've had in my life, it wasn't quite so linear. After my husband and I had split up, I had had a couple relationships with women that were challenging. And when I was 35, I was single for the first time, basically since I was old enough to start dating. And that summer for me became sort of like the adolescence I didn't have. And so I was dating a number of people that summer, both men and women.
And, you were a player. That's what you were.
I was a little bit. You know, there was online dating. I was trying that out.
I'm not mad at you. Go on, feels, yeah. Babe. Feel it.
Yeah. So that summer was, there was a few people. And my son's father, I had actually met him at a friend's. And it was unexpected. And he was unlike anybody that I'd ever met in my life. Sometimes we don't see what's right in front of us. But in any case, I also found myself pregnant for the first time in my life. I'd never been pregnant before, never had a pregnancy scare. There were a couple of years where I wondered if I was even able to become pregnant because, you know, like I said, my husband and I were together for 13 years and never at that, during that time, was there ever even a, oops, maybe. So when I found myself pregnant, I knew right away that I was going to have the baby. I was going to carry the baby. And he wasn't necessarily of that same mind. And yeah, it's been probably one of my greatest challenges is co-parenting with this person. And I was very reluctant after I had my son to bring another person into my life, male or female.
I can imagine.
Because I had challenges, right? I mean, I've got this baggage and I've got my boy and my wife. that only lasted a brief few months, but my wife and I actually met at work. So the agency that I worked for at the time, where she continues to work, was very open. And in Canada, we have Pride Month in June. And so the agency would decorate. It was a child protection agency. So also to honor the children who would be going through the doors, who may be struggling. There was a big celebration always during Pride Month. So we had a decorating committee, of which I was the coordinator. And I was going around the office, you know, who's gay? Who wants to come help decorate?
Right.
Recruited her to decorate. And then from that moment on, there was a connection. And I'm glad that she decided to take a chance of overlooking the challenges and baggage that I came along with for us to develop our relationship.
And also being there in the workforce. Open my brain to something. What is it like being in a relationship with a woman versus being in a relationship with a man? Now, I understand it's different. There's no way anybody can tell me that it is not different, okay? Because, you know, the hormone levels of two women, the intimacy, we're not even talking about sexual brains, okay? That's a whole nother show. We got somebody for that, too, we're going to talk about. But just the cohesiveness. And also, your son knew that his mother was gay from birth, because after you left that relationship, then you married your wife, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so this is a normal for him.
Yes.
So my questions are three. One, what is it like to be in a relationship with a woman, because you've been in a relationship with a man, you know, the difference there. Two, you know, your son and some of the things that he has to experience, because kids are not kind, you know, and they don't understand two mothers. That's just not what they know. So how does he feel about this? And three, just, how do you give someone encouragement that is kind of going through that?
Yeah. Okay. So three really big questions. So the relationship, for sure, as you've said, men and women are very different. And so living with a man is very different than living with a woman. And then you add the layer of a relationship on top of it. So there's a joke about, you know, the talking, but there is definitely more processing, right? As women, we like to process our emotions. We like generally, we like to express how we're feeling. We want to have understanding. We want to try and find a way to make or reach that common ground or commonality. So there's definitely a different level of emotional intimacy in a relationship with a woman, from my experience. And there's also the challenges, right? As you said, I mean, there's hormones. When women are together, their cycles sync. My wife's a little bit older than I am, so she started going through the menopause, and so she's getting hot flashes as I'm one of those people who's freezing cold. I mean, I don't have my turtleneck on today because I'm doing this interview, but it's only 4 degrees out there.
Oh, wow.
So there's definitely some issues that, or challenges that go along with, navigating a relationship where both parties are, expressive.
Right.
And with respect to my son, we married, my wife's name is Nancy. Nancy and I married when Quinn was 3. So he was quite young. So he's never really known or remembered a time without Mama Nance. And he's learned through other people's expressions, he's been able to see the prejudice. So his father is not open. I mean, his father has told him things like, we deserve to die because we're lesbians. And that's been very difficult for him. But I remember one experience. We were in the shopping mall, and Nancy was doing something at another store, and we were walking by one of the little jewelry stores. And Quinn wanted to stop and look at the window, and he saw this ring, this beautiful engagement ring. And he goes, Mom, that's so pretty. You should get it for my stepmom. And the saleswoman, an older lady, happened to come over, and she looked at me and she goes, you would buy his stepmom a ring? And at that point, Nancy's walking up, and I said, well, she's my wife, so yes. And so the woman's reaction was not necessarily positive. And so Quinn, even, I think he was only about 4 or so at that time, but even he was like, Mom, what's the matter with her? And so there were those experiences that would hurt my heart that he would have to see or process.
Right.
Fortunately, he goes to school in Toronto, and Toronto is very, it's very diverse. Mm-hmm. And the school that he goes to, one of the parents happens to be a trans person, female to male. And so that child in his class was very, like, their family was very open. Everyone knew, right? And he went to a school where they would raise the pride flag in June, and they would do rainbow activities and such. So he had sort of the institutional or the adults in his world, for the most part, being open, but it was the other children. And he would say to me, sometimes, Mom, I don't tell people that I have 3 moms, because his father's also remarried, right? So he has 2 stepmoms, a mom and a dad. And he says, sometimes it's hard. And that hurts me that he has to go through that.
Right.
But at the same time, he's one of those wise beyond his years children, very open-minded. And he'll say, you know, there'll be moments where he will tell people, you know, you're just wrong. Like, you're just closed-minded.
Right.
And so, but I know that it's selective. I know that there are times where he feels safe and times where he chooses to keep that information to himself.
Right.
We have a really great neighborhood that we live in, and we have a pride flag that hangs on our porch. And just as recently as this weekend, we were sitting on the porch, and he looked over and he goes, I just really love that flag. I love that everyone knows. And I thought there was that little moment where I was like, yes, yes.
Right, exactly, the pride. So what is he? He's like 10 years old now?
Yes, he'll soon be 11.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, brains, you can get crunchy if you want to. I'm going to ask this question. With regards to his choice growing up, do you think that it is more tilted because he sees the life of homosexuals openly versus the life of heterosexuals? Again, people tell me all the time that, you know, being gay is not a choice. But then I have other friends that have opted to be gay because of sexual assault or abuse or comfort or desire. So do you think that that navigates him one way or another? I mean, I know that's hard for you to look inside of his little brain, but mothers know, they can tell.
Yeah, no, we've always openly discussed things. And my wife, she's one of six, and her brother is also gay. And so, and he's always known Uncle Stephen is gay. And so it's been a question that he's had, and he's asked me, like, from when he was quite young, Mom, do you think I'm gay? And so how I ask him is, you know, what do you feel? What do you think? And of course, when he's really little, it's like I say, you know, well, we don't have any idea what any of us are at this point, because our job is just to be a kid. But as he's gotten older, and it was really clear right from the beginning, I mean, he was a child who in grade five, he was writing love notes to this one little girl, Penny. And he is very clearly a romantic for the opposite sex. There's no ambiguity. Although he did say at one point, Mom, I was wondering about it, so I thought about it. And now he's starting to get, you know, the stirrings of pre-puberty, right?
Right.
So I say, well, when you look at boys, do you get that feeling in your tummy? And he says, no, no, I don't. Not the one I get when I look at girls. I said, well, I think that's your answer, right?
Right, right. And you never know. The world is becoming gender fluid. I thought that was an appropriate question to ask you because of the work that you do as a social worker. That you're going to get these tough questions. So now, as far as encouragement from a social worker's perspective, a person that is struggling with their identity, with their sexual preference, should I stay or should I go? What would you say to that person?
Well, I think that it's, you know, it's really a question of drawing inside yourself and knowing your own heart. I think for outside people, there is often, and we go through this, my wife works with foster parents, and so this question will come up. And often, you know, foster parents are from the faith community. And so sometimes there's some challenges with acceptance. And, you know, there is this idea, well, they just don't know yet. But there isn't an assumption made that you just don't know if you're heterosexual. So if someone is saying, this is what I'm feeling, we owe it to them to honor that feeling, because it is no less valid than the assumption that they're going to be heterosexual. I mean, and that is the assumption that we have, right? Right from when babies are infants, right. And you know, your friend comes over and she's got a boy and you got a girl, and oh, isn't that cute? They're going to be boyfriend and girlfriend. There's never a question about whether those are appropriate statements to make, right?
But also, your child doesn't know what their identity or identity role is unless until they're taught. No?
Well, not necessarily, because I think that, and this hasn't been my experience, but I know from others, I know it was my wife's experience, I know it was her brother's experience, and she comes from an Irish Catholic family where, you know, it wasn't around, it wasn't something that you saw, but as she said, I always knew that I was different from my sisters. Mm. I didn't care about those boys. I was looking at the girls. And so I think that there is, what's taught is whether or not it's okay, whether your feelings are all right. And whether you feel that you're going to be loved for having them.
Right.
I did not feel safe to ever explore those feelings with my family. We actually watched last night on Netflix, my wife and I, a documentary called A Secret Love. And it was about one of the women who was from the League of Her Own baseball. Okay. And they were together for 70 years. Wow. And she didn't tell her family until they were together for 65 years. They just always knew them as friends who lived together. And the family never assumed or thought otherwise. They just thought that they were friends. And at 70 or 80 years old, this woman was shaking as she went to tell her niece, "I'm gay." And her niece was like, "I had no idea, but why didn't you tell me before? Did you think I wouldn't love you?" And she said, "Yes." And so it really is, because there is so much subtle and sometimes not so subtle bias against same-sex relationships, there's a lot at stake to be open. And I'm open for the most part, but sometimes not always. Sometimes I'll play the pronoun game too, where I'll just say partner, or I'll say my spouse. And I'm not specifying because it's not a safe space.
Right,
or
right.
My perception is it's not necessarily a safe space to be open in that way. And
what I've been taught is, you know, a little girl knows that she's a little girl because her mother tells her she's a little girl, and you put the pigtails on and you put the dress on her and you give her the dolls, and all of that is quote unquote appropriate. The little boy has on the pants, has on the tie, has the truck, works with the tools, taught not to cry. So those are the emotions that are ingrained by parents as far as rearing them and coaching them into being the quote unquote normal, stereotypical, you know, individual that society or parents want their children to be. And when they wake up one morning and find out that the son is wearing mama's pumps and putting on lipstick, and the daughter is got her hair cut butch and, you know, acting in a more masculine type of way, then there is this, you know, this stunning revelation of, oh my God, what did I do wrong? Or what has society taught my child? When this was kind of programmed into them instead of letting them evolve naturally to who they are meant to be. Does that make sense?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Expectations are huge. I mean, yes, I had to sleep in those pink sponge rollers. You remember those?
Oh my God, yes.
For years, because my mother wanted me to have ringlets. And it wasn't until I decided, this is not me. This is not, and this wasn't even about my sexuality, but it was about being forced to be an image that didn't fit what I felt.
Right.
So I stuck the gum in my hair so I could get my hair cut. She had no choice. Right. But I think that we do that to children in all sorts of ways. My son didn't grow hair quickly. And I didn't either when I was a child. So he didn't really start to have hair till he was about a year old. He didn't get his first haircut till he was three, just before his third birthday. And so he had these long ringlets, and people would make an assumption that he was a girl because he had these long ringlets. And that didn't bother me. He liked it. He liked his hair.
Right.
And I tried hard not to really, I don't want to say not to gender him, because of course I, you know, on some level I did. I am a part of our society. But I really tried to not put that pressure on him if there were ways that I could avoid it. And I think that's important.
It is important. But again, it's very combative when he goes back to daddy's house. And, you know, he wants him to be this rock solid male, you know, image, and, you know, what your mom's doing is wrong. And then he's got his wife. So there's a lot of conflict there. So I really pray that everybody grows up and grows into the new normal and the reality of what this is, because there is a child's well-being and his growth process that is hanging in the balance. and all of the controversy is for what? I don't understand. If you're through with the relationship, allow me to love and be free.
Yes.
On both sides.
Actually, that was one area where we didn't have conflict was his long hair. His dad wanted him to have long hair, and he was quite upset when it was actually my son who said, I want to have a haircut now. And so his dad was like, no, keep it long. And he's like, no, I'm ready to cut it now. So that was the one area where we didn't have conflict.
You know, in biblical terms, the long hair is a man's strength.
Yes.
So, the Samson. So you have a coaching practice now that you are building.
Yes.
Tell me some of the things that you would encourage individuals to know in your coaching program that would encourage them through this process. And that, let me not pigeonhole this, because is your coaching process and program for gays, or is this something else? Define
that. No, I'm working with women. I have decided to work with women as opposed to men and women. But actually, I would say, much like the general population, my work with the LGBT community has been a lesser part of my work, more so just women in general. And I work with women who are going through major transitions, major changes, and not necessarily sexuality, right? It could be leaving a marriage. It could be leaving their career to start their own business. I've been working more with or learning more through my own process, and then, of course, bringing it into my work around narcissistic abuse recovery. My background, I worked primarily for many years with pregnant and newly parenting women, so that transition into motherhood. A large part of my work is really looking at how we can become stronger, right? And so through that process, it really involves, for most of us, doing work on healing that inner child and really getting to know who we are under all the layers, as we've talked about, of socialization, of expectation, of, you know, doing what you thought you needed to do in order to be loved by whomever, your parents, your partner, whoever that may have been. And then finding that space to actually love ourselves more than anyone else.
Well, I think that's some beautiful work. And I think that you are a subject matter expert. Well, I mean, again, you know, you're not just talking the talk, you've also walked the walk. And that's very important.
Yeah, that's really important for me. And that's why I became a social worker to begin with. I mean, leaving home at 15 years old, I had a lot of experiences and was fortunate enough to have some really important people who helped me throughout my years. And so that's what made me decide, I want to be someone like that. I want to help others like I was helped. And so that brought me into social work. And then the experiences that I was going through, I really wanted to be able to use my knowledge, both the academic sense and the personal experience, in a different way than what I was able to do working within a governmental agency. Mm-hmm. And so that's what birthed my coaching practice.
Has your family ever come to terms with who you are?
To a certain extent, but I'm not close with my family of origin these days. They did come to our wedding, but I don't think that they've ever really come to full acceptance. And that was made, it's been made really clear to my wife and I through various interactions. And so one of the best things that we can do for ourselves is find that network that helps lift us up.
Absolutely.
And sometimes that's chosen family. It's not family of origin.
Right.
And having support and love and acceptance from others, I mean, I think that's one thing that we crave as human beings. And this COVID is helping so many of us see the importance of that. And especially now that for some of us, there's an absence of that and we're having to find new ways to maintain those connections, there is this fundamental need in all of us for belonging and acceptance. And sometimes it's not able to come from the people that we grew up with.
Right.
But right. Finding that network as adults, it's fundamental.
Well, I think that your son is very lucky that he has a wonderful mother, two stepmothers, and a wonderful father, because there are strengths in his father. No matter how he's able to adjust or navigate through this, there's going to be some great takeaways from that. So speaking of takeaways, tell my brains how to get in contact with you, Michelle. They want to work with you. I know that you have some online courses that you're looking to develop. And, you know, just to have a good sounding board to talk through these issues. Maybe they have children that are struggling with this. I think that you'd be a great resource. How do they get in contact with you?
So I have a website that hasn't been updated in a while, but you can find me at michellewinterburn.com. And the easiest email address to reach me is radicalreframer@gmail.com. And so radical reframing is one of the processes that I use in my work. And I have a Facebook community, Radical Reframers, and my business, Michelle Winterburn Coaching, is also on Facebook and Instagram.
Well, brains, okay, so are you ready to be radically reframed? Are you ready to have the conversation? Are you in a quandary trying to figure out who you are? Are you feeling the feels? Okay. Do you have questions? Because I have questions, okay? And I am not trying to be parsnickety, rude, but these are questions that my brains want to know. And I thank Michelle so much for being open and honest and vulnerable and exposing herself and her truth to all of you, all 60,000 of you in 38 countries. Oh, yes. So that's how we get down here. That's how we bump our uglies on the edge, all right? So please go and check out other edgy conversations right here. YouTube, subscribe, Blog Talk, iTunes, Mixcloud. We want to raise those numbers through the roof. You keep coming back. You're loving, you're digging what's going on. If you've got a great, compelling story of interest that you want the world to hear, if it's therapeutic for you to even share it, please come on the edge. I'm here for you. Thank you so much, Michelle Winterburn. When you get through this COVID and I get through it, we're going to have to get together, because San Diego is on and popping. And I used to love working in Canada, so it's a great place too.
Thank you so much, April. This has been great. I've really appreciated having this conversation with you.
Well, thank you so much. And I wish you all the best. Your wife, Nancy, I said, hey. All right. Peace and love, brains. Get yourself together. Stop judging.